On this week's edition of New York Now, the legislature makes a surprise trip back to Albany while Governor Andrew Cuomo heads to the White House. We'll have details.
This hyper-partisan Washington environment is toxic for this country.
How have schools been changed by the COVID-19 crisis, and what does that mean going forward? Cuomo says he wants to reimagine education, and Bill Gates is leading the effort. We'll hear from State Senator Shelley Mayer, the chair of the Education Committee, and Regents Chancellor Betty Rosa. Plus, Rachel Silverstein from the Albany Times Union speaks with a world-renowned education expert, and Gannett's Joe Spector has the news of the week. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation
law prohibiting it. And we will take them to court challenging it.
Get another stand for New York.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. We're going to spend a lot of this week's edition talking about education and how the state schools have been impacted by COVID-19. But first, there was some action right here in the state capitol this week. The state legislature made a surprise return trip back to Albany while Governor Cuomo went all the way down to Washington, D.C. to meet with President Trump. Joining me to talk about all of this is Joe Spector from the USA Today Network. Joe, thanks for making a return appearance to New York Now.
I'm making a return appearance just like the state legislature made a return appearance to the Capitol this week, Dan.
Exactly. You're making your comeback. So let's talk about the state legislature, because they came back and they passed a whole package of bills related to COVID-19. They didn't come back on routine business. They didn't come back, you know, to do their normal things. They came back specifically to pass a number of bills that relate to the disease and helping people with certain things in their view. Joe, give me some of the highlights that we have here. I know we looked at things like the Child Victims Act, maybe some rent relief, things like that. So give me what you noticed.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me. The state legislature hadn't been in Albany since April 3rd. That's when they finished passing the state budget. And this is their first return since then, more than 2 months. And, you know, the reason is, COVID-19, as you noted, they left Albany. They've held several public hearings since they left in April. But this was the first time in person. Now, not everybody was in Albany. A lot of them voted remotely. But there were a good number of lawmakers, at least some, who came up to Albany. A lot of them were wearing masks in the legislative chamber, which was something new for sure, sort of a sign of the times. But their goal was to pass a series of packages that dealt with COVID-19, or even deal with issues that dealt with things that they needed to do so people had time because of coronavirus to get passed. So, for example, the Child Victims Act. That was set to expire in August. That allows people who were victims of sexual abuse to come forward and file lawsuits against their abusers. That was set to expire in August. Governor Cuomo, by executive order, extended that to January. And what the lawmakers did was now extend that to through the summer of 2021. So a full year extension on that. You know, there's been a lot of price gouging as it pertains to products and other things due to coronavirus. Lawmakers passed a package of bills that would deal with price gouging, so retailers and wholesalers couldn't inflate the prices of equipment and goods and cleaning supplies. They also took masks fall under the loitering law in New York. So if you're wearing a mask, as you should if you're out in public, there was laws that made that loitering. And so to clarify that you couldn't be arrested or charged or given a ticket for wearing a mask under that loitering law, they made it clear that due to the coronavirus, you're clearly able to wear a mask without any harassment or any questions from the police. So those were a few of the ones that they did. And the larger issue still remains. Will the legislature take any steps to deal with the state's fiscal problems? And so far, they haven't. State faces like a $13 billion deficit due to coronavirus and a lack of state revenue. So they have to deal with that at some point. But that's not something it looks like they're going to do in the near term.
So what can they do? I mean, the governor, we see him asking for federal money to fill the state's budget gaps. Does the legislature have any power to create revenue in this time? I know there's a lot of talk about, not among lawmakers, but about among advocates, about a even higher millionaire's tax. But I don't know what else they're looking at. Are we hearing anything?
Well, they certainly could do that if they wanted to have a millionaire's tax. But at this point, there's no attempts to do that from a legislative standpoint. It's not something the governor has seemed receptive to, so that makes it difficult to move forward. But that's one avenue. You know, New York City is looking for the state to give them a loan to let them so they could to foot them some money, billions of dollars, so they can get themselves through their own fiscal challenges. And Governor Cuomo on Thursday said he has a hard time or has concerns about loaning New York City money for their operating deficits, figuring that that's like a one shot and how do you pay that back. So that's one that's on the table as well. And then overall, you know, the state with its budget deficit is awaiting, as you said, federal money from the federal government, aid through a new stimulus package. And, you know, you mentioned Governor Cuomo was in Washington on Wednesday to try to continue to push for the federal government, Congress. He met with President Trump to try to get a package that would help states and local governments. And so if and when that comes, that might be something for the legislature to have to address as well.
Yeah, definitely something to watch in the coming days. A really important conversation had between the governor and Congress. Joe Spector from the USA Today Network, thanks so much for starting the show this week on New York Now.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Governor Cuomo said something a few weeks ago that turned some heads in the education community, particularly those of teachers. He said that as the state builds back from COVID-19, he wants to, quote, reimagine education. We still don't know exactly what that means, but he's asked Bill Gates to head up that effort. That didn't sit well with teachers, who were worried Cuomo would embrace distance learning in the long term after COVID-19 is over. He was asked about that last week. Take a listen.
I would agree with the teachers who say there is no substitute for classroom teaching. There is no substitute. Saying a kid is going to be on the other side of a computer remotely, that is the classroom experience. It's not. But on this, with this abrupt shift, what did we learn? What skills do teachers need? What equipment do students need? You know, remote learning, that suggests every child has the equipment at home. Parents know how to do it. There's an internet signal for every student in every locale. None of these things existed.
State lawmakers will likely be involved in any major changes to the state's education system, and they have their own thoughts on how schools should move forward after COVID-19. I spoke to Senator Shelley Mayer, who chairs the Senate Education Committee. State Senator Shelley Mayer, thanks so much for being here on New York Now this week. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Dan. Pleasure to be here, even remotely.
Even remotely, you're right. So you are chair of the Senate Education Committee, and we are talking a lot about education this week on the show. I'm curious, just to start out, what you've been hearing from educators, from teachers, you know, all of the people in the education community about what they're experiencing right now, because this is one of those places that have really had to go through a complete overhaul during this time to cope with what they're dealing with COVID-19.
I think there's a variety of things, and it depends who you're talking to. And you didn't mention one group that I always talk to, which is parents.
Yes.
You know, let's start with parents, because parents really didn't sign up for getting a packet and figuring out how to teach a child, you know, geography, geometry. And some of them are being called to do that, particularly if they have several children, if they have a child with special needs, or if the system is not working as smoothly as we would like. But schools are sort of all over the map. I've been on calls in the city of New York with their parents, students, and teachers here in the suburbs of New York City, upstate as well. And I would say there's a range of experiences. One, we weren't prepared and we really didn't know what was entailed with moving quickly to a remote set way of educating. Two, technology is very uneven. You know, whether you're in a rural community or you're in an urban community as I am, where some kids have access to technology and internet, others don't. Third, this is very dependent on parent involvement, and that's inconsistent and understandably so. Fourth, our districts themselves didn't have policies within a district. Individual schools are doing it differently, teachers, different platform. And five, this is a real sort of leap of faith that remote learning is so great. And I think one lesson we've learned is it's not so great. It's not a bad substitute. We did very well under the circumstances, But students and teachers, parents, and the school community needs a personal relationship. That is what part of education is, not an afterthought. It's part of the experience for children, young children, older children, certainly part of the community of learning. And I was just on the phone with the superintendent. Every aspect of this requires personal interaction. And those that can show that during this period, I think, have been the most successful. But really, no one was prepared. And there's a lot of lessons learned. We can do better, but we can't rely on distance learning.
You bring up a lot of really good points that I've been thinking about, and one of them is technology. And I think it's a great point that you made that in even, you know, single districts, we have these discrepancies in students that have technology, students that don't. For some, distance learning just isn't a possibility in the long term. And a couple of weeks ago, the governor made this comment that he wants to, quote, reimagine education. And we don't really know what that means, but from what we can tell, it's kind of a, let's take the lessons that we learned from this, how we've adapted, we being the education community, and maybe put them into what comes next. And of course, we don't know what comes next. I'm wondering what your reaction is to the idea from the governor and where you see this all going down the road, especially with so much uncertainty. We don't even know what's happening in the fall right now.
I think the most important thing is I believe in process. I believe we need a lot of voices at the table. I wish there were teachers, actual teachers, in his task force. I wish there were more parents, not just the PTA, which I support strongly, but the city of New York, millions of school children. We just cannot ignore the voices and the different experiences of those. So, and thirdly, I think while remote learning has some sort of appeal intellectually, from an experiential level for students and teachers and for the future of our education system, I don't think we can be excessively dependent on it. We need to use it as a tool.
How does funding play into all of this? Because earlier this year, the Regents wanted $2 billion more in education aid. Unfortunately, the legislature and the governor weren't able to add any additional education aid, but they were able to keep it flat without any cuts. And now we have the governor who may be forced, he says, to make cuts to schools because the state is just grappling with this revenue problem from the coronavirus. So as we start to move forward and think about how schools are going to, you know, operate in the summer, the fall, going forward, how does funding play a role in that, especially when we're thinking about things like technology and social distancing and all these different issues here?
Well, I think funding is an underlying dread in the minds of every parent of the public school system, superintendent, board of education, and taxpayers. Like you said, we in the Senate Democratic majority and our colleagues in the assembly were fighting to get to what the regents asked for. And we were on a better trajectory, but obviously COVID came and we had to readjust and we had no money. And luckily, because of the CARES Act, we were able to supplant the cuts the governor would have made because we had no money on foundation aid. But if there are additional cuts, districts across the state will be devastated. Here in my home district, already we have notices of over 100 layoffs already, and that's without a cut. And this is Yonkers, you know, one of the big five, a school district that's done exceptionally well under challenging times. But so money is a fear. I mean, you go to bed every night, seriously, in this field, nervous every day. And that's why we joined the governor in fighting for this federal money for the state, for the municipalities, and also for schools directly. And that's what we are hoping there is more in the next stimulus plan.
Are there any alternative revenue sources that maybe we could explore? I know that some of the unions really would like to see a tax on the ultra wealthy to fund schools, hospitals, all these different things. Is that something that may be considered? I know that there are other options as well that people have thought about, like eliminating the film tax credit, just like a lot of things out on the table, but obviously you can't do them all and there's going to be consequences to anything that you do.
I have a bill that I put out once we got into COVID called the SHARES Act, and it really came out of my experience in my district, seeing that the sacrifice is not shared equally. So I put in a bill for a 2-year period tied to COVID. Those earning $5 million or more would pay a slightly higher tax rate for 2 years. And originally I thought it would make $2 billion, but it gets to $1 billion. I call it the SHARE Act because I did it together with my colleague, Senator Toby Stavisky. 85% of the money goes to K-12, 15% to SUNY and CUNY. This is in order to deal with the pit in my stomach feeling that I was describing about the likelihood of cuts. We believe that higher income earners, this is a moment they can step up and join us in sacrifice in order to ensure their schools are not cut.
All right, well, we will keep an eye on it down there. Always great to have your perspective here on New York Now. State Senator Shelley Mayer, the chair of the Education Committee, thank you so much for joining us with your perspective this week.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be with you.
So while the legislature can consider new changes to the state's education system, it's the job of the Board of Regents to oversee and guide the state's schools. The education system in New York is unique. It's controlled by the Board of Regents, which appoints the state education commissioner. They have a lot of power over the state schools and will play a huge role leading into the next school year. I spoke with Betty Rosa. She's the chancellor of the State Board of Regents. Regents Chancellor Betty Rosa, thanks so much for joining us here on New York Now via Skype this week.
Thank you for having me.
So you are Chancellor of the Board of Regents, which is kind of this supervisory board of the state's education system. It's very important, but a lot of people only know Regents, obviously, as those tests that we took in June and December in high school. But the Board of Regents plays a pivotal role in education around the state. I'm wondering from your position right now, what have you been hearing from educators from around the state during this time of the COVID-19 crisis? Because I have to assume that it's been extremely difficult for a lot of people, and you've had to hear a lot of these troubles from people.
All of us are hearing from, whether it's the Big Five, urban, suburban, rural, and we're listening and obviously not only hearing, but we're intimately working with the various communities based on not only our regulatory issues, but also our guidance.
So do you think it's too early to make that decision on the fall semester, I guess, for lack of a better word, the start of the next school year? Do you think it's too soon right now to make that decision on distance learning? I assume that there are just several factors that you have to consider before you decide whether to send students back.
Well, we're actually working very closely. We have been with the last couple of weeks, we have been engaging in conversations. We have put together a plan, which we have, in the last week, have been having internal discussions with our regional design. We have a task force, and that task force is very much focused on the reentry and opening bell. So no, it's not. We've started already these conversations, this work. We have been intimately involved with looking at other models in other places such as Denmark, Singapore, Norway, places that have already opened, and the kinds of strategies that they have used, along with the kinds of concerns and the models that they have engaged in to ensure that children are back to teaching and learning.
You know, thinking about strategies, the governor a few weeks ago came out with not really a proposal, but more of a broader strategy idea where he wanted to, he's calling it, quote, reimagine education. And I know that that hasn't set well with teachers, mostly because we don't really know what it means. We don't know if he wants to reexamine how the entire education system works or if it's just small changes here and there. What do you think about that? Have you had any conversations with the governor or the executive branch of government, not yourself included, obviously, about what that would mean to reimagine education? And do you think that that's a good idea?
Well, first of all, I think that we are looking at our entire conversation is obviously been on recovery, rebuilding, and reinventing. And that's basically what we've been focused on. And that pretty much aligns with some of the thinking that the task force on reimagining is focused on. But our focus has been on reopening schools.
How does funding play into all of this? Because the Board of Regents earlier this year recommended that the state add $2 billion in education spending statewide, which would make a huge impact in a lot of schools. Obviously, because of finances, the legislature and the governor kept school aid flat, and now we're looking at a potential 20% of schools across the board. So as we move forward, I guess, how do you accomplish the goals that you want to accomplish, keeping education top class in New York, while, I guess, doing more with less? How do you accomplish that moving forward, especially during these times that are so uncertain?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head by saying uncertain times. We are in a financial meltdown. And so this is going to be very challenging, even at this point, in terms of trying to do more with less. All of these issues, all of these connections are going to need investment. And if we are committed to making sure, particularly for our most vulnerable students, we really need to make sure that the investments are there. And it's very hard to think that on the one hand, we have to do more, whether it's transportation, when we look at the issue of what typical schools have been designed for social purposes as well as the academics. The whole issue of social distancing is the complete opposite of what how schools have been designed. So rethinking how we are going to do this, how do we limit movement? How do we have conditions that we know have to adhere to health and safety? How do we do that given some of our high schools and some of our elementary schools that have large classes? And that is a challenge for all of us, which is why we're engaged in this work right now to ensure that we come up with models that help us at least get to a place that we can continue this work. Certainly, the issue of remote teaching and learning is going to be a variable in the conversation, but we also have to think about year-round schools, which again is another expense. So it's very, very hard to accomplish and support the issue of teaching our children without the funding and the investment.
Right, right. There's just so many moving parts to this to consider. That's all the time we have, but I wish you luck on this. It's obviously a huge, huge endeavor. And thank you so much for joining us here on New York Now, Chancellor Rosa from the Board of Regents.
Thank you for having me.
New York is not alone in this discussion about how schools move forward after COVID-19. Schools across the country are having the same conversation, and obviously it's different everywhere else other than New York. With me now is Rachel Silverstein from the Times Union. She recently spoke to Andreas Schleicher from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me here on New York Now this week.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. So Rachel, tell me about Andreas, your conversation with him, and what you were really curious to find out when you were talking to him. I imagine you cover education for the Times Union, so I imagine you were more educated on this issue, no pun intended, than other people would be.
I think he was really interesting. He shed some light on, you know, which school district, which countries had their schools more prepared for a global health crisis like this. In terms of being able to, on the fly, have their teachers develop an entire curriculum and figure out how to deliver it remotely to students, regardless of where they're situated, whether they are economically disadvantaged or have special learning needs or struggle with the English language, they're immigrants. And so he had some really valuable insight in terms of, you know, how prepared the U.S. was and also what schools can do better to prepare for this in the future, as well as what schools might look like in the fall when, you know, students return to class.
Right. You asked him about that, and I think that was a really interesting response from him. Let's just listen to that clip really quick.
So hindsight is 2020. Now we're looking forward. You know, we all know about the summer slide. The COVID-19 slide is arguably a lot steeper. Will students ever catch up? What would you recommend to school systems moving forward in terms of getting this generation of students that is going to be shaped by this, you know, incredible, like, global epidemic? How will schools get them up to speed?
Well, when students and teachers will go back to school, they will see a different world. You know, teachers will see a much more diverse kind of student population. Some students will require a lot more assistance and help to find their way back to schooling, regain trust in education, regain trust in their teachers. I think that's the reality. At the same time, I also hope that you will see lots of students who say, well, you know, actually, I found online learning really interesting. I discovered new ways of learning. Why can't we make learning in the school more adaptive, more interactive, more technology-based?
Really interesting thoughts from Andreas Schleicher. Rachel, tell me where people can watch the full interview if they want.
So we streamed it live to the Times Union Facebook page, our Twitter account, and our YouTube account. And you can actually see me every Thursday. That's when I do a weekly Facebook Live. We talk about education in light of this crisis. So tune in.
Very cool. Rachel Silverstein from the Albany Times Union, thanks for being on New York Now this week to talk about this. It's really interesting stuff.
Of course. Anytime.
We'll have a link to Rachel's full interview over on our website at nynow.org, where we also have coverage for you every day here from the state capitol. And don't forget to follow us on social media at nynow_PBS. Until then, I'm Dan Clark. Thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.